I have these results from Super Tuesday just in. Freedom, personal liberty, smaller government, reduced taxes, limited foreign intervention, did not win. Bad. Money Machine. Show 98. Early February. Hello, everyone. This is Paul Douglas Boyar. Thank you so much for joining me here on the Mad Money Machine as we explore money mayhem and are working our way up to show number 100. I've gotten one call so far on the Mad Money Machine voicemail line at 206-734-4763. That phone number is out at the website, madmoneymachine.com. The madmoneymachine.com and Mad Money Machine podcast are proud to be sponsored by Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. Matching people with portfolios, I encourage you to go to their website, take the risk capacity survey, sign up for an account with them, and let them help you manage your financial freedom. What could be more important? You realize that in the long run, how you manage your financial freedom and your financial affairs is dramatically more important than your salary. Let Index Funds Advisors help you manage your financial freedom. The opinions expressed on the Mad Money Machine are solely those of Paul Douglas Boyar and do not reflect those of his family or of the sponsor, particularly on this episode. Let's turn now to the news. Actor Wesley Snipes was found not guilty of federal tax fraud and conspiracy charges, but was convicted on three misdemeanor counts of failing to file a tax return. Snipes, who was indicted on six counts of willful failure to file a tax return in 2006, was acquitted on three of the charges, but found guilty in the other three. He's now facing up to 3 years in prison, rather than the full 16 years. The two co-defendants, Douglas P. Rosalie, and a delicensed accountant, and Eddie Ray Kahn, a tax protest leader, were found guilty of tax fraud and conspiracy. Wesley Snipes became an IRS target for not paying taxes from 1999 through 2004 after he used tax protest arguments, long rejected by courts, as well as using fake checks to pay the U.S. Treasury. The actor claimed that IRS's own code meant no citizen had to pay taxes on income earned in this country, and the agency had no legal authority to collect wages anyway because it is not a proper government entity. He also declared himself a non-resident alien, thus not a subject to U.S. tax laws. Well, congratulations, Wesley Snipes. There was an article in Wednesday, February 6th, Wall Street Journal by Tom Herman. The IRS is likely to get more resources to combat cheating on tax returns. And so, you know, and I didn't know this until I read this article, that your brokerage company does not report your cost basis in funds and stocks that you buy. I did not know that. And so the article says, advocates of the proposal say the idea, known as cost basis reporting, would improve compliance on capital gains taxes. The Treasury Department estimates this proposal, if enacted, could raise an estimated $7.5 billion over 10 years. But they go on to say that the additional cost for enforcement would raise the $11.36 billion for the IRS 4.3%. So the way I figured it costs an additional $500 million per year. And if you take that out 10 years, of course, that's $5 billion. So they're going to raise $7.5 billion, and they're going to pay the IRS bureaucrats $5 billion of that. So rob from the rich and pay to the bureaucrat. The article says the potential for non-compliance on sales of securities is considerable under current law because the taxpayer's basis is not reported. Well, you remember that show I told you that I bought Microsoft 14 years ago? I think I actually only bought it 4 years ago, now that I'm remembering correctly. Oh, let's see. Now, the Bush budget includes other compliance ideas that may gain traction. Among them is the president's call for increased criminal penalties for willful failures to file tax returns. The president proposes elevating this offense to a felony from a misdemeanor. This proposal would be effective for returns required to be filed on or after January 1st, 2009. Thus, it wouldn't have any impact on the case of Wesley Snipes. Congratulations again, Wesley Snipes. Let's go to the phones. Got a call from David.
Hey, Paul, listen to your most recent episode, and I just had a question for you. Are you comfortable with going back and making the money you made 10 years ago, just like you're suggesting the government to do with Ron Paul's statement? And comment number two is you are holding on to Microsoft stock for 14 years to avoid paying long-term capital gains tax. While Microsoft stock continues to not appreciate with the market, what is the cost of your capital sitting idle instead of being reinvested into the market? I think basing your decisions buy sell on tax implications is a flawed philosophy because of the cost of capital of having idle money. That's just two random thoughts I had listening to your podcast. I'm sure you always appreciate debate and different opinions, and I hope you appreciate these. This is David from Raleigh, North Carolina at the Fast Money Machine podcast. Thanks.
I do appreciate the call, David. Thanks very much. And on the first point, would I want to get paid what I got paid 10 years ago? Well, probably not, although in my specific case, I don't think my particular salary has gone up all that much in 10 years. And I can also say that the article that we're referencing there, talking about how income taxes, if we got rid of income tax today, we'd still have as much money coming into the government as we had coming in 10 years ago. The article that said that and did the fact-checking on that said that the delta might be 30% if you accounted for inflation. And so that's what we would have to account for in our salaries as well, is the inflation. But wouldn't you agree that getting rid of a lot of government spending would be worthwhile? And if you got rid of a lot of spending, you could also therefore get rid of a lot of taxes. And what a burden it is to us personally to fill out income tax forms. You know, I did not go to school to be an accountant, yet the government requires me to be an accountant. So I think it's basically just wrong, morally wrong. A second point about Microsoft holding it for 14 years. Yeah, like I said, that must have been a mistake. I think I've only held it for 4 years. But anyway, yeah, Kramer makes the same case in his early books that you shouldn't let taxes figure into your active trading strategies. But if you read Bogle, he would say that taxes are a huge factor in your investment decisions. And you need to get rid of taxes and fees in order to have your investments perform as good as the market. I mean, to illustrate this, you can make some admittedly absurd hypothetical situations. Take two stocks that both continue to go up month after month after month at a steady rate. All right, first of all, that's the first absurd thing. But after the first month, you are invested entirely in stock A, and after the first month, you sell it, you take the gain, you pay the taxes from what you've made, and you roll that then into stock B. Stock B goes up, the second month, you sell it, you take the gain, you pay the taxes, and you put that back into stock A. And you continue doing this throughout the entire year. Well, in that case, what we're talking about is short-term capital gains, which are the worst of all crimes against the taxpayer. And it's immediately obvious that to compare putting all of your money into stock A and letting it go for a full year and then selling it if you have to after the full year and paying only 15% capital gains tax versus the 28 or whatever percent gain that you'd have to pay on a short-term capital gain is a much better way to go, right? So let's ignore the short-term capital gains tax for a moment and change the scale to 1 year. You sell stock A after 1 year and trade it into stock B, and after 1 year you pay the taxes and back and forth like that. You can see that at the end of 10 years, you'd still have less money because of all the taxes. But nonetheless, I definitely see your point. If we knew ahead of time that Microsoft wasn't going to go up, then yeah, sell it and get into something else. Now, here's another thing to keep in mind, another way to answer the question. What if selling that stock puts you in a higher tax bracket? What if it puts you into the AMT, for example, the alternative minimum tax? What if it puts you in a tax bracket that disqualified you from being able to buy a Roth IRA in the year that you wanted to do that? I think we really shouldn't even be talking about paying taxes on stocks that we sell, because if you're going to trade stocks, you're going to want to do that in a tax-deferred account in your IRA, for example. So that's one lesson I learned, is don't buy individual stocks in a taxable account. That way you don't have to worry about paying the taxes on that, and you don't have to worry about filling all these horrific Schedule C's or D's out, or whatever the IRS wants you to fill out regarding all the stocks that you've bought and sold and keeping track of all that nonsense. But I think, you know, basically, you might be right in that, yeah, I should probably sell Microsoft and put it into something like VTI, the Vanguard Total Stock Market Exchange Traded Fund, and then just forget about it. Don't sell it until I need the money. And not worry about whether Microsoft is going up or down, or General Electric is going up or down, or so forth. But David, here's another thing. Now, you've got your podcast, Fast Money Machine, and I've got the Mad Money Machine. What we need to do is we need to have one of these call-in type podcasts where we get you and me, and maybe we get that money guy, Brian Preston, and then we get the disciplined investor guy, Andrew Horowitz. Let's get all four of us on the line every week and talk about what's happening in the world of money. Wouldn't that be a great idea? You can talk about stocks. I can talk about portfolios. Horowitz can talk about trading and timing sectors. And Brian Preston, the money guy, he can talk about life insurance or something. I'm just kidding. I'm just goofing on you guys. No, it'd be kind of fun. Our four podcasts are, as far as I can tell, well, if you add in the Wall Strip thing, they are the four remaining independent podcasts. They're in the top 25 shows out at iTunes investing category. And so let's all just pool our resources and see if we can get one show to go to number one. How about that? Wouldn't that be great? But anyway, thanks for the call, David. Let's play around with the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I will place the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the marble. And for the selected guru, give a little background on their investment philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time on Random Machine Show 98 is... Oh, this was an interesting one. FSK. FSK remains rather anonymous. I don't know if FSK stands for Francis Scott Key or what, but FSK writes a blog posting called FSK's Guide to Reality. The URL for that is fskrealityguide.blogspot.com. And the byline says, I want to do useful work, get paid, and not have to report it for taxation, confiscation, and regulation. And there's a particularly interesting post that I will read from this blog. And it's entitled, The Remnant. I'll have a link to it in the show notes for show 98. FSK writes, there is an interesting article written by Albert J. Nock called Isaiah's Job. The essay first appeared in the Atlantic Monthly in 1936 and was recently posted at lewrockwell.com. This article refers to the prophet Isaiah from the Bible. He was preaching about how society in general was falling apart and what needed to be done in order to fix things. Isaiah complained to God that he was wasting his time and nobody was listening. God responded that yes, the vast majority of people were not listening and were clueless. The leaders will ignore his advice and shun him for trying to help. However, there is a minority of people that are aware of what's going on and are looking for support. They need to hear someone who is telling the truth. Isaiah preached for several years. He was persecuted. He ran away and told God, "There's nobody left but me. I was lucky to escape with my life. If I die, there's nobody left." God told him that was not true. Out of 1 million people living in Israel, there were 7,000 members of the remnant who needed to hear him preaching. He should go back to Israel and get back to work. God assured him that everything would be all right in the long run, even if Isaiah were killed. FSK writes, "I hear the term the remnant referred to quite a bit nowadays. The remnant are the people who will get together and build a new society when everything else falls apart. The current economic and political system is falling apart, so it's time for the remnant to get together and figure out what to do. It is impossible to achieve reform by voting. The clueless people are the vast majority, and they will always outnumber the remnant." FSK writes, "The only solution I can think of that has a non-zero chance of success is, hyperlink, an agorist revolution. Members of the remnant need to set up their own economic and political system independent of the current government. This way, the transition to the new economic and political system will be smooth as the current system collapses." If you're writing for a mainstream audience, you have to water down your stuff. If you're writing for the remnant, you should write about the truth as best as you can. If you're writing or talking about the right topics, you don't have to seek out the remnant. They will find you. Based on my personal experience, I would say that members of the remnant are about 1 to 2% of the general population, which is slightly higher than the Old Testament's estimate of 0.7%. The internet is a great tool that allows members of the remnant to communicate and share resources. Under normal circumstances, their density in the general population is too low for them to be effective. Typically, members of the remnant are kept isolated from one another, but the internet may change things. I think that my target audience is members of the remnant. I talk about topics that are important, and the mainstream media has completely censored. FSK says, "You are a member of the remnant if," and FSK lists 10 things. Number 1, you appreciate the merits of a gold standard instead of worthless, unbacked paper. Number 2, you feel that the Federal Reserve should not provide a massive subsidy to the financial industry and large corporations in the form of negative real interest rates. Number 3, you are annoyed at the biased coverage of mainstream news sources. Number 4, you understand how income taxes convert you into a government slave. Number 5, you are annoyed how property taxes force you to pay rent on the land you're supposed to own. You understand what full alloidial title means, and you're annoyed that you can't actually get full title to the land you thought you owned. 6, you are annoyed that taxes force you to pay for government schools, which are used to brainwash your children. 7. You understand that government-subsidized programs prevent free market alternatives from developing. Then, the government program is advertised as being needed precisely because there are no free market alternatives. 8. You understand that the government restricts the supply of doctors, guaranteeing they will always have high salaries. The healthcare crisis in the USA is caused by government licensing requirements for doctors. 9. You are a member of the remnant if you are able to understand the hyperlink compound interest paradox and feel outraged. And finally, you're a member of the remnant if you are unhappy to discover that hyperlink the USA is actually a communist country. You are able to compare the planks of the Communist Manifesto to current U.S. economy and understand the argument that I gave. If you are a regular reader of my blog, you probably understand all of the above points. you also understand that none of the above topics are ever discussed on a mainstream news source. Fortunately, the internet is a viable resource that lets people share information. I would never have understood the above items if it wasn't for other people writing on the internet. Hopefully, I've been able to describe these ideas more understandably than other sites present them. Well, there you have it. FSK, Reaching the Remnant. Now, I am not FSK, but I would like to hear your comments about this blog posting. You can either make comments in the show notes of show 98, or you can email them to me, feedback@madmanmachine.com, or call a voicemail line 206-734-4763, or of course, more properly probably, would be to comment on FSK's own website itself. Well, congratulations, FSK, you're the guru on show 98. You remember I said in a previous show that I think we're undergoing a great awakening with this internet thing, and after having read that bit about the remnant, I'm wondering whether it's just the remnant that is undergoing the great awakening. I got an email from Jack, and if you'd like to have your email read on the Mad Money Machine, send it to me at feedback@madmoneymachine.com. And Jack writes, "Hey Paul, here's a thought that I haven't heard mentioned. Really, when it comes to indexing or investing in general, the philosophy of indexing is one that invests in capitalism instead of investing in stocks. But what if capitalism is in trouble? With the global warming crisis, there have been interesting shows that address global consumption. Two that I've watched and heard recently are The Story of Stuff, from storyofstuff.com, and from Marketplace American Public Radio. They had a series on Consumed, a week-long special that addressed different issues concerning global consumption." And he's got a link for this I'll put in the show notes. My question is, it seems pretty apparent that the entire world is going to have to change its behavior when it comes to consumption in order for us to even continue to survive on the planet. So I wonder how this will affect the global economy, the stock market, and thus index investing. Since I'm 33 and have the bulk of my investing years ahead of me, I'm guessing in the next 40 years there will be some drastic changes in how the world does business. Anyway, I thought this might be an interesting topic to discuss in one of your shows and thought it'd make a fun graphic for the podcast art. Hope all is well, Jack. Well, you know, it's interesting, Jack, that Mark Hebner of Index Funds Advisors has this quote. He says, there's two situations when you should sell one of your funds. The first one is when you need the money, and the second one is when you lose your faith in capitalism. And then he kind of laughs. And I thought, yeah, I've always thought that was kind of a joke, because who would ever lose their faith in capitalism, right? Well, Jack brings up a good point. Maybe there's some truth behind this quip. Maybe there's an occasion where one might lose their faith in capitalism. Might that be the situation when you should lower your risk capacity? But I gotta say, if capitalism's in trouble, heaven help us all. There's probably bigger things to worry about. I'd like to talk for a second about something that I think you need to do if you haven't already done it. You need to go and get a copy of this book, Index Funds, The 12-Step Program for Active Investors, by Mark Hebner of Index Funds Advisors. This, my friends, is the Bible for index investing. This has it all. This lays it all completely out for you. 12 steps and exactly why index fund investing is the best approach for your financial freedom. And we covered step one in January, and that was it helped define what an active investor is. It's like in any 12-step program, the first step is admitting that you have a mistake, and the step one here is nothing different. It's admitting that you're an active investor and you need to change your ways. Step two is called Nobel Laureates. You know, in the other 12-step programs, the step two is typically something like seek a higher authority or seek a higher power. And that's what the parallel here is with step two, is we're looking to academics who don't necessarily have a financial interest in their scientific analysis of the stock markets, and we're looking to what they've discovered in their analysis of the behavior of the markets. Starting all the way back in 1654 with Blaise Pascal, moving on into 1690 with Edmund Halley, 1697 Abraham de Moivre, Louis Bachelier in 1900, in his thesis, he anticipated much of what has become a standard among financial economic theories, that the random walk of stock market prices, and one of his groundbreaking conclusions was there is no useful information contained in the historical price movements of securities. This random walk of changing prices has created a misconception, though, among investors that stock prices change randomly for no rational reason. Well, the reason stock prices are random is because the news that moves the prices is unpredictable and random. News is inherently unpredictable or would not be considered news. Many other academics, including Paul Samuelson, Robert Merton, Eugene Fama, Fisher Black, Myron Scholes, and Burton Malkiel, have later expanded on Bachelier's work. Alfred Coles did a study in Chicago of 12,000 stock recommendations. He published an article then, Can Stock Market Forecasters Forecast? His conclusion, it is doubtful. He published a follow-up study in 1944 reviewing 6,900 market forecasts over a period of 15 and a half years. Once again, he concluded, there's no evidence supporting the ability of the forecaster to predict the future of the market. So this step introduces these and other Nobel laureates and helps explain why passive investing is the best approach to your financial freedom. I encourage you to get a copy of this book. Go to madmoneymachine.com, scroll down on the right-hand side, you'll see the cover for index funds available through Amazon. Click on that link and buy a copy and read it. Gotta have this one, folks. This is the number one book that I recommend that you read. Well, I promise to update you on the Lazy Portfolio Smackdown, sponsored by Index Funds Advisors. And I've got several things to talk about this time. First of all, a January update. If you go out to the website and under the Quick Links tab, click on Lazy Portfolio Smackdown or madmenmachine.com/portfolios. You will see all the entries in the Lazy Portfolio Smackdown game that I've started at the beginning of the year. We have, what, how many individuals? 66 individuals that have submitted a lazy portfolio. And then we also have a number of professionals that have published lazy portfolios in the past. And I have ranked their performance so far through January. And I know, first of all, let me just say, this doesn't mean anything. To look at the one month performance of these portfolios is absolutely meaningless. All right. So why am I doing it? I don't know. What we really need to look at is the long-term performance of these portfolios combined with the risk of the portfolio. And what do I mean by risk? I mean the standard deviation, the swings in the value of the portfolio. What is the magnitude of gains and losses over a short period of time that this portfolio, these portfolios witness in their fluctuations, right? What we're trying to achieve there is the highest gain for the lowest amount of risk. And that's what I hope to calculate in this game at the end of the year. But on that Lazy Portfolio Smackdown page, we see that Ben Stein's retirement portfolio lost the least through January. Remember, that was the worst performing portfolio for 2007 because he invested in just two funds, a REIT, and a dividend-paying fund. Well, it has gone down only 0.33% through the end of January. The worst performer, Jim Lowell's Sowers Growth Portfolio. It went down 7.12% in the month. Well, all of them are down. Looks like the median is about 3.5% loss for the month. Of the individual entries, Mud FUD, ID number 20, is up about 28%. And why is his up and everybody else is down? He invested in exactly one fund, the China Bear Fund. Well, this portfolio goes against everything we believe in, diversification and lazy portfolio investing. He's picking a very specific sector. We'll see how it holds out in the long term, Mud FUD. If China turns around, we'll probably see that fund drop like a rock. The second portfolio in the list, Tex Williams, up 14.5%, ID number 64. He's also got some short funds in there, shorting the Russell 2000, shorting small cap 600, betting against China, betting against emerging markets. Well, that's not the kind of portfolio that you could hang on to for the long term, I don't believe. Because over the long term, capitalism is going to have earnings, and earnings are going to be reflected in rising stock prices. And if you're short the market, you're going to lose to capitalism. It'd be fun to follow what happens. And at the bottom of the barrel, Pete B, down 9.78%, ID number 53. He's in an iShares S&P GSTI. It looked like maybe the semiconductor fund and a FTSE index and a gold trust. He's making some sector bets there that didn't pay off this time. Now, if you go back and look at the home page, and there's a posting out there I made called the Lazy Portfolio Smackdown Update January 2008, a posting on the main page of the website. This is the one with a colorful graphic with lots of splotches on it. This is plots the risk versus return. The first chart there looks at these professional lazy portfolios and from August 1st of 2000 all the way until the end of January 2008. So that's what, about 7.5 years, I think, the way you calculate that. And the portfolio with the absolute best return was IFA's Index Folio 100 Bright Red, which came in at almost 12% during the annualized during the period and had a standard deviation of roughly 15% annualized for the period. The next best one, though, is an outlier, had a higher gain for the amount of risk it took on. This was Scott Burns's Six Ways from Sunday portfolio. It had a little bit over 11% annualized gain for the period and looks like around 9% annualized risk. And so it had a much higher return versus risk ratio than any other portfolio in the bunch. And why is that? Well, he invests in six different funds, not all of them Vanguard, equally. The Vanguard Total Stock Market, the Vanguard Inflation Protected Securities, this is the bonds, the TIPS, the Vanguard Total International Stock Index, and then a sixth in REITs, which didn't do well last year, but have done well a lot, very well in the previous years. And a American Century International bond, which is interesting, international bonds, and energy then. Fully a sixth of his portfolio is in the Vanguard Energy Fund. Well, that's a sector bet that has paid off for the Scott Burns portfolio. And then I did one more graphic there, and that was the returns over a 1.5-year time span. And this was to include then the poor performance of the REITs recently. And this chart is not as meaningful because it measures these portfolios on a short term, but it gives you an idea of what they've done recently. Well, I'll continue to update you on the Lazy Portfolio Smackdown game as the year goes on. Well, there are a couple of more emails I wanted to get to on this show from Garen and from Barry in Newfoundland, but I'm going to have to put them off into show 99. Sorry, guys, but keep your emails coming, everyone. Look forward to seeing you next Friday on the Mad Money Machine. Coming up in 2 weeks, then, if I can sit down and do it, it'll be Mad Money Machine show number 100. And I invite you to call in to the voicemail line 206-734-4763 And if you have any well wishes for show number 100, I'd be happy to play them on that show. I've got one so far. And on show 100, I promise that I'm going to reveal a secret that I've been keeping from you ever since the beginning of the show. And I think you'll find it interesting. This is Paul Douglas Boyer, saying it takes money to make money, and it takes reaching the remnant to make a Mad Money Machine. I'll see you next Friday. In the meantime, go buy a copy of that book, Index Funds, the 12-Step Program for Active Investors. Visit our sponsor, Index Funds Advisors, at IFA.com, matching people with portfolios. Some music on this program provided by music.podshow.com. Until next week, stay invested. Good luck in this market.